July 30th, 2008. Cedric Muhammad Black Coffee Program, blackcoffeechannel.com. Now let's go to Nigeria. They about to get it popping over grievances over the distribution of oil wealth in the Delta, okay? In the Delta region of Nigeria. Sometimes you'll hear about the price of oil being affected by quote-unquote terrorists. Many call them freedom fighters in Nigeria. They threaten to bust pipelines, kidnap workers. They're gangster. They're called MEND, M-E-N-D. Here's a report on them from the International News.
The Niger River. Members of the Movement for the Emancipation of the Niger Delta, the MEND, survey the banks. This rebel group has been waging a relentless campaign against international oil companies and the Nigerian government, which it accuses of corruption and hoarding oil wealth. Their efforts have succeeded in choking off Nigeria's oil production by almost 25%.
If they don't bring this our situation to a limelight in discussing and implementing how we are going to be developed properly, we are going to break down the production process to the barest minimum.
Nigeria is the world's eighth largest producer of oil, pumping some 2 million barrels a day. But even at $130 per barrel, the Delta remains the poorest region in the country. The MEND want this wealth redistributed and has resorted to kidnapping of foreign oil workers and sabotage to pressure the government. The government has sent troops to protect the rigs, a move the MEND has warned against.
The more presence of military we are feeling there, this problem is going to escalate the more. If the government is wise, they should evacuate all those military presence.
The vulnerability of oil facilities is rumored to have prompted Nigeria's National Oil Company to offer the rebels $12 million in protection money. The MEND denies having received any money, claiming the government paid a criminal gang, and the MEND has vowed to destroy major pipelines in the next 30 days.
They're not playing around in Nigeria. The MEND, we'll talk about them more in the future. MEND, okay? Movement for the Emancipation of the Niger Delta. MEND. Let's go to Chad. Some more complaints about oil revenue not being distributed to the people.
Farmer Richard Betalum thought he was going to be rich. Oil was found in his field. American oil company Esso dug a well here. And every day, 300 barrels of crude oil are extracted from this well alone. It is worth about $40,000 a day. A real fortune. But here in southern Chad, the discovery of oil in this field doesn't mean big money is going to be flowing, at least not for Richard.
I'm a poor man, but when they discovered oil in my field, I thought I'd become rich. But look, I'm still a poor man, nothing has changed.
So why did you let him dig a well in your field?
You know, here it's the government who decides, not me.
And with the money they gave you, what did you buy?
I could only afford to buy two oxen, and that's it.
In the region, there are already over 500 wells, and Esso keeps on drilling new ones. The oil is pumped from 3,000 meters below the surface and is stored in these massive tanks. Then the oil is transported through a pipeline built under this road to an industrial port in Cameroon, some 1,000 kilometers away from here. Thanks to its oil, Chad earns about $1 billion a year. According to the government, this money is used to finance the construction of public buildings. But with the Chadian state waging war against a rebel insurgency for the past 2 years, a lot of money goes into military expenditures. But authorities insist some of the money also goes back to the locals.
5% of the country's oil revenues go into the development of the regions where the oil is produced. So saying that this money is solely used for military purposes is not true.
But back in the villages in those oil-producing areas, when a woman has to give birth, this is how she's transported to the hospital. Though a number of new health centers and new schools have been built thanks to oil money, the government has failed to fill these new public services with qualified personnel. So people in the area struggle to get their share of the oil wells. Some resort to scavenging, like here in a forest littered by old pumping cables, wires, and abandoned metal objects used by the oil industry. Here men recycle iron and rubber, and then sell it to neighboring Nigeria. Chad had once committed to use its oil revenues for the development of its country and its people. But with war and political instability, money that could have helped pull the country up ends up going into weapons and ammunition.
All right, that's what's happening in Chad. Now, just wanted to hit you with that. I got another story pertaining to Africa and the diaspora that I wanted to hit. Now, again, are fashion and beauty the same? I'm not through with this topic yet. Are fashion and beauty the same? Oh, and Gwen, this is the same Gwen that we have missed. This is Gwen from Louisiana. Okay, thank you, Gwen. I'm going to read a little bit of this article. April 1962, Muhammad speaks, are fashion and beauty the same? Fashion is seasonal, but beauty is eternal. Beauty and fashion as we know it are often confused. It would seem that the desire of most women is to be admired for her beauty. So we see the result in the mad, indiscriminate dash for fashion. What is vogue this season? Are the new skirts long or short? Is the little boy or the little girl look in? Is it flare, sheath, or trapeze? Tux or ruffles? A short haircut or a full-blown green wig? Let us question for a moment, what is going to make us beautiful? All black women are endowed with the basic material for a true beauty, a mind, heart, and body already fashioned by the perfect creator. We have only to develop them to their fullest beauty, not distort or disregard them so much that they change seasonally with Paris. You may argue that the mind does not enter into it, but it certainly does. What frame of mind would a woman who has the little boy or the free and easy look have? You do not need fashion. You as a black woman need only a few basic rules to follow to be beautiful. Now, here are the three rules. Tell me if you agree or disagree. One, cleanliness, internally and externally at all times, for cleanliness is next to godliness. Two, modesty is a woman's most valuable asset. It makes her far more noticeable and interesting than does the frequently almost naked fashion we see in the streets daily. And last but not least, naturalness. That's the third factor. So the factors are one, cleanliness, two, modesty, three, naturalness. You, the black woman, are beautiful without the cakes of makeup you have been wrongly taught to wear. Every feature on your face is clearly defined without accenting them. You were born with the right color hair, so match your beautiful skin. Strawberry blonde and bottle green does not complement your skin color the way your natural hair does. Dress to accent your femininity. Do not let anyone change your perfectly designed body by making you pear-shaped one season and S-shaped the next. Remember, you are a woman, and femininity is your key to real beauty. April 1962, is that outdated? Or is that on point? Does it need to be refined? Is there an innovation that you could add to that? Let me know. I'm going to go a little bit over. Elazar says, what about the Black Wall Street? Well, again, the Black Wall Street depends on which one you're referring to, good brother. The Black Wall Street that gets all the attention is Tulsa, Oklahoma. However, the Black Wall Street that I think was even more important to look at was Durham, North Carolina. In Durham, North Carolina, that whole wealth that was created, that's still there in that area, black wealth, came from insurance and banking. I've read some of that history from my book. I get into it. But again, the model is cooperative economics. Our banking institutions started from mutual aid societies in the black church, but primarily mutual aid societies. Fraternal orders are the linchpin of cooperative economic efforts. And the Black Wall Street of Durham, North Carolina exemplified that. Cameron from Paterson, New Jersey says the biggest obstacle we encounter in building wealth is we are asked to do it in the place we have been oppressed while dealing with our oppressor. No other group has been asked to do such a task. Prior wealth and principles exist elsewhere and then are transferred to America with those groups. Yeah, but and what I'm saying is if we had greater African diaspora unity, some of that knowledge that the West Africans and some of our Caribbean family have would accrue to the black man and woman of North America. As a matter of fact, you got Haitian and Jamaican communities in Toronto and Montreal that have Isuzu cooperative economic rotating credit savings and societies. So it's in motion. Let me give an example of how powerful our diaspora is. You didn't even know this was going on. I didn't know this was going on. We have one brother, Nimba. He's from the Ivory Coast, I believe. He may have known about this, but I just found out about this yesterday. The story is up at blackcoffeechannel.com. Let me pull this down real quick. I was blown away by this. Send in your comments. I'm going to ride a little over. And Jaquin from the Bronx reports in. He says, yes, I am, my brother. He says, remember, I asked him the question, was he going to consider opening up an account at Carver Bank in Harlem, the black-owned bank, the first or the largest publicly, I'll say it's the only publicly traded black-owned firm. That means you can watch their stock price. You can get a lot of information on how they're doing, SEC reports that Carver Federal Savings has to file. But he says, yes, I am, my brother. I am in the process of opening a business, and I will be using Carver for my business accounts. I believe there is a physical location of Carver in Harlem on 116th and Lenox. And I believe you are correct, my brother. You are correct. But the whole list of all the bank locations, the top 25 black-owned banks, their branch locations, the manager, the phone number, the physical address, it's all there for you. Okay, I got this story ready to go. African immigrants
in the diaspora. A Muslim ritual is a morning prayer before going to work. In this cheap hotel in downtown Buenos Aires live around 40 African people, five or six to a room. Precarious living conditions for these people in search of fortune. But even if it is still not what they had hoped for, they take it with a grain of salt.
I know a little bit about Europe because I went to Italy, but they didn't let me enter. I spent 4 days in Rome's airport. Here there's no discrimination. For sure there's racism in any place, but not as much as in Europe.
Argentina is not a common destination for African immigrants, but as Europe increasingly closed her doors, a new stream of immigration began in the 1990s. People from the Ivory Coast, Nigeria, Sierra Leone, and above all, Senegal. There might be around 6,000 in Buenos Aires. All of them settled in Argentina because it was relatively easy to get in and to stay.
I came by plane, going through Brazil. There is peace here, much more peace.
Here there's no discrimination based solely on skin color, no systematic ID control. However, these men who tirelessly walk the city earn their living through an illegal activity, selling jewelry on the streets. It is a way to earn a little money and send up to $400 US a month back home. Blessed with the gift of gab, these talkative immigrants have an easy time making contact with the locals.
Salud, salud, salud. Señor?
No.
No? Listo.
Okay, amigo, gracias.
No.
Mucho gracias. Papi Juan, gracias.
Argentina has a flexible immigration law. For example, after entering into the country, even while you are still applying for residency, you can obtain an ID number in order to start working.
In the few meeting places like the mosque, people are sharing tips, sensations, and of course commenting on the latest restrictive European immigration laws.
They've closed off all access to Europe. This policy of segregation really makes me sad. It hurts me.
Only South Americans have easy access to Argentinian residency, but foreigners are taking advantage of a legal gray area in order to stay as long as possible.
The first week I went to the immigration office. They gave me some paperwork, which I have to renew every month. So basically, I'm renewing it every month.
While the Argentinian constitution clearly affirms that the state must promote European immigration, confusion appears to be at its peak on the best way to integrate these newcomers.
Africans in Argentina. Interesting. E-Double from Indianapolis says Obama did say he pledged allegiance to Israel, but do you think he is only saying that because he wants the muscle of the Jewish powers? He has to see that Iran is not a threat to us. It would be hard for him to sit under Jeremiah Wright and not be semi or even fully conscious. What do you all think about that? I want to show you all how much a grandmother can love. Some of you may have heard about the wig bandit crisis in South Carolina. Some people robbing folks. Listen to the love of this black grandmother. It's funny but touching. Check this out.
Boys in the West Columbia area are breathing a sigh of relief today now that police say they've arrested two wigged bandits. But the grandmother of one of the suspects claims her grandson is innocent. Jordan Sandler has the interview you'll see only on WIS News 10.
It took every wig I own.
Mary Nettles says she wouldn't normally present herself without a wig on, but all 30 of her wigs are now in the hands of authorities. She says they confiscated this one, and this one, but she says none of her wigs resemble these, the ones worn by the wigged bandits.
The wig I seen them boys had on, it was nothing like mine. Well, the wig in the picture, they was kind of raggedy looking and with threads in them. I don't have no wig like them.
Nettles claims those aren't her wigs, and that's not her grandson.
I don't believe that's Michael.
She's convinced her grandson Michael Nettles and family friend Kevin Cole are not the wig bandits. She's seen the surveillance videos.
I still don't believe it.
And she even admits the voice on the tape sounds like her grandson.
I said it may sound like his voice. I said, but that ain't not a Michael.
She claims her grandson couldn't have committed the robberies that took place during the nighttime, claiming he was right here in this bed.
Michael sleeps in a bed with me every night.
West Columbia Police Chief Dennis Tindall says despite Mary Nettles' objections, he's positive his department arrested the right guys. This afternoon telling me, there's no question in my mind that we have the two wig bandits. There's a lot of evidence pointing to these two guys. Tindall says this includes a Michael Nettles fingerprint found at one of the crime scenes.
It's a fingerprint at one of the places that matched up to Michael.
I don't believe that, no, Lord. I don't believe it. I do not believe it.
Nettles believes her grandson and Kevin Cole will be found innocent in a court of law. Authorities are convinced otherwise. Jordan Sandler, WIS News 10.
Well, nothing can separate a grandson from his grandmother's love. I want to talk about the EU. They're the gangsters of the week for trying to keep everyone from reading the economic partnership agreements between them and the African and Caribbean nations. That's gangster. They said that we don't have time to translate. The darkies may figure this out.
Today's a new day. Got the up in the suitcase. Go uptown to Harlem. Tell them that I sent ya. Tell them it's August. I'm going to November. I need a couple birds. Get abroad. Have them sent up. Call my bird. Get my broad. Have her sent up. Call my squad.
I mean, this is true gangsterism. You will not find this in your local neighborhood. Global trade talks derailed because the African and Caribbean nations, along with China, Russia, and Brazil, and India, rather, trying to actually figure behind Massa. Massa, can I read that agreement that I initialed? I didn't sign it. Can you imagine the gall of Africans and Caribbean nations doing this? Unbelievable. This was last week.
Global trade talks went into its third day today after developing countries gave an unimpressed response to the U.S. proposal to cut its farm subsidies. Without a breakthrough in the coming days, the World Trade Organization's Doha negotiations risk further years of delay. On Tuesday, the United States said it was ready to cut its annual ceiling of trade-distorting farm subsidies to $15 billion U.S. dollars. This is a level lower than its spending in seven of the last 10 years in order to kickstart the talks. However, India, Brazil, and other big developing countries said Washington had to make deeper cuts before they will offer concessions of their own. This is because the ceiling represented virtually double the level of U.S. farm subsidies last year. Officials say talks on getting developing countries to open up their markets in manufactured goods are heated. Trade officials say they're extending hotel reservations into next week, with talks likely to go beyond Saturday's planned end date. Without a breakthrough on the core issue of farm and manufacturing trade in August, the Doha round risks being put on hold by the U.S. presidential election and could remain that way for a couple of years. Billed as a chance to bolster the global economy and help fight poverty, the round has struggled from crisis to crisis since it was launched in 2001. Developing countries complain that huge U.S. subsidies squeeze their farmers out of the market, reducing food supplies and contributing to a recent spike in global food prices. The European Union also faces calls to cut its farm import tariffs.
From Indianapolis, Nick from Washington, D.C. has a response to you. Let me read E's question again, because this comes up a lot in reference to Senator Obama. Let me see what E-double says. Says, Obama, did he say he pledged allegiance to Israel? Obama did say he pledged allegiance to Israel, but do you think he is only saying that because he wants the muscle of the Jewish powers? He has to see that Iran is not a threat to us. It would be hard for him to sit under Jeremiah Wright and not be semi or even fully conscious. Nick from Washington, D.C. says, enough with the fake, the spook who sat by the door theory. Obama is down with Israel straight up. Are some of us coming up with a fake spook who sat by the door theory to justify the moves of Senator Obama? I don't know. That's interesting. Interesting response. Man. But hands down, the EU, the gangsters of the week, keeping a document, a legal binding document, international document from being translated because the African and Caribbean nations were waking up too fast. Cameron from Paterson, New Jersey says, I agree with the Pan-African philosophy. I only wish some of our brothers from these other countries and continents felt the same about us. There is the perception that we are less sophisticated and lack the skill set needed to do business. It was created and must be destroyed. Now, this is an interesting discussion because, unfortunately, some of the this is interesting, Cam, because some of the black brothers and sisters who went abroad to do business in Africa kind of left a skunk like odor. It's not discussed too much, but you can look into some of the history between the followers of the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey, who went into Ethiopia and highly offended Haile Selassie. We acted a fool over in Ethiopia, from what I was told. Did not go over too well. You also saw it again with some of the brothers and sisters who, after Nelson Mandela was freed, went over to do business in South Africa and acted a fool. So part of the problem we have is they don't trust us. Some of them, some of our family across the Atlantic does not trust us. They know how the black brother and sister hustler can do his thing. Gwen agrees with the article, I believe, the one on our fashion and beauty the same from Muhammad Speaks, April 1962. Trent says he just walked in the door. What did he miss? A whole show, brother. You missed the assassination attempt on my life at around 2:10 when we lost power. Rod Ginyard, Culver City, California, the legend. He says, beauty, according to men, can be clouded by the female form. As you know, younger brothers have it a little stronger, having higher testosterone levels. My guess is that beauty abounds in Southern Florida. He's crazy. LA's offer in Brooklyn says, Cedric, wouldn't it be wise to go somewhere else and become prosperous, like the East Indians in Africa, like the Jewish people in Latin America, like the Middle Easterns in Mexico? Why just focus on one area, America? I think Cameron was alluding to something like this. Well, what? So you're suggesting we should become a great immigrant community and create wealth? I don't have a problem with that, Eleazar, as long as we're welcome wherever we're going. My problem is, why wouldn't you practice the principle at home first? And when I say at home, I mean literally in your house. I mean, why go to another country to practice cooperative economics when all we're asking you to do is try it in your house, in your local neighborhood, or through the Black Owned Bank Initiative, blackownedbank.com. I saw a comment from Cameron as well in here. What'd he say? He says, black people have practiced our brand of transferring wealth and ideas in America, but it is limited. Families financing houses or businesses is old, but the philosophy hasn't evolved due to us trying to fly under the radar of whites who may undermine our efforts. Can you say Chad? Mm-hmm. Sending you more comments. The talks in Zimbabwe, I don't think they've collapsed. I think they are. Well, they may have collapsed. The rumor is that Tsvangirai was offered the vice presidency and he's not feeling that. So talks broke off. However, the official Zimbabwe paper, the Herald, state paper, said that the talks ended or took a break for each party, ZANU-PF and MDC, to come back home and update their constituency. So I believe that, because I think that the Herald newspaper would lose no opportunity to criticize Tsvangirai if there was something wrong. So keep our fingers crossed. But again, that problem, that economy in Zimbabwe cannot be fixed unless Southern Africa forms an economic bloc. E-props from Flatbush. He says, I know a dude who used to work for my grandpops for $65 a week in the BK, Brooklyn. He participated in a few susus and such and kept his ties in Haiti for business purposes and now owns a multi-million dollar building on Fort Greene. It has 3 storefronts and his original trade, a tire shop. I don't even think he can read. Again, E-Prop says he knew a dude who used to work for his grandpops for $65 a week in Brooklyn. He participated in a few isusus and such and kept his ties in Haiti for business purposes, and now he owns a multi-million dollar building in Fort Greene. It has 3 storefronts and his original trade, a tire shop. I don't even think he can read. I get into this in my book. This is one of the differences between entrepreneurship taking off among Haitian, Jamaican populations in New York and why we languished. But where there was a cross-fertilization, where you had a Jamaican population intermingle with black Americans in a place like Harlem, you found fertile ground, you found businesses popping up everywhere, and you found fertile ground for the Garvey movement, which was a movement largely representing cooperative economics. Keep it coming. Lawrence Williams from Indianapolis says, if you still think Senator Obama has not sold his soul, then read Margaret Kimberly's article in this week's Black Agenda Report. Story just released today. He is going to pardon the Bush crime family. Read it for yourself. We're inching up on that show on what to do with Cynthia McKinney's candidacy. I think I'm 2 weeks away. Cameron from Paris, New Jersey is laughing at the story about the Whig bandit who is being defended to no limit by his grandmother. She said that boy even sleeps in the bed with her. He could not have committed the crime because he was sleeping in bed with his grandma. Cameron said, how old is that dude in the story? Did she say he sleeps in the same bed as her? I applaud you for not laughing over the air. Well, I just messed up. That story got funnier by the minute. Wigs, robbery, mistaken identity, family beds. In case you all missed it, I gotta play this again. Listen to this. It's bandits in Columbia, South Carolina using wigs. But listen to the grandmother, the beautiful black grandmother, how she defends her grandson.
Boys in the West Columbia area are breathing a sigh of relief today now that police say they've arrested two wigged bandits. But the grandmother, one of the suspects, claims her grandson is innocent. Jordan Sandler has the interview you'll see only on WIS News 10.
It took every wig I owned.
Mary Nettles says she wouldn't normally present herself without a wig on, but all 30 of her wigs are now in the hands of authorities. She says they confiscated this one, and this one, but she says none of her wigs resemble these, the ones worn by the wigged bandits.
The wig I seen, them boys had on, it was nothing like mine. But the wig in the picture, they was kind of raggedy looking and with threads in them. I don't have no wig like them.
Nettles claims those aren't her wigs, and that's not her grandson.
I don't believe that's Michael.
She's convinced her grandson Michael Nettles and family friend Kevin Cole are not the wig bandits. She's seen the surveillance videos.
I still don't believe it.
And she even admits the voice on the tape sounds like her grandson.
I said it may sound like his voice. I said, but that ain't not a Michael.
She claims her grandson couldn't have committed the robberies that took place during the nighttime, claiming he was right here in this bed.
Michael sleeps in a bed with me every night.
West Columbia Police Chief Dennis Tindall says despite Mary Nettles' objections, he's positive his department arrested the right guys. This afternoon telling me, there's no question in my mind that we have the two wig bandits. There's a lot of evidence pointing to these two guys. Tindall says this includes a Michael Nettles fingerprint found at one of the crime scenes.
The fingerprint at one of the places that matched up to Michael.
I don't believe that, no, Lord. I don't believe it. I do not believe it.
Nettles believes her grandson and Kevin Cole will be found innocent in a court of law. Authorities are convinced otherwise. Jordan Sandler, WIS News 10.
She said that boy is in bed with me. Cameron says, I don't believe we should go elsewhere. I only think we should have to be more committed to fighting for it here. We are giving a half-hearted attempt to stay in the fight when we run into resistance. We have most of the infrastructure and network. We have to be ready to adapt and improvise. E-Double from Indianapolis says we should start a black coffee susu. He's down. Brother Vernon from Columbia, Maryland, he says Donald Trump mentioned that it is going to be imperative that we think globally as it relates to economics if we are going to be successful. I agree, Brother Vernon, and of course I agree, Eleazar, but my question is, are we going to go to Africa as individuals not practicing cooperative economics, or are we going to come to the table with something to offer? I would like for us to practice cooperative economics in the Western Hemisphere because you have plenty of international connections. You have your Latino original family, you have your Caribbean original family. I mean, we haven't even practiced unity between the blacks in New York and the blacks in Toronto. So we're automatically an international people. We don't have to go anywhere to be a global people. We can just go to Central South America, the Caribbean, North America. That would automatically put us in Africa. I think, you know, you can disagree. Eleazar says, with the baneful influence of whites, it's hard to create wealth in your own home. Not that I'm advocating migration, but with the terrible history, some black people are scared to do business. How do we persuade our people to do so? He says, Barack has sold his soul. Anytime you get approval from the Zionists, you are in. And Jesse Jackson is mad because he's no longer the House Negro. I don't know. Again, Senator Obama is running an effective campaign. He's touching all the bases with the interest groups that you need in order to win. So I guess you had to judge him by the rules of that game. I mean, you can't become president without having the support of the Jewish community. You can't become president without having the support of the civil rights and or senior citizens community. So everybody is kissing rings. I don't know. I don't know. Reverend Jackson wouldn't be a House Negro under any circumstances if he was starting an investment club. I mean, the name calling and all that, I understand. I mean, at the end of the day, we may find out Reverend Jackson did more for black-owned banks behind the scenes than we ever could have imagined. What would that make him then? If Senator Obama is following the talking points of AIPAC, but he's putting 10% of that $300 million in a black-owned bank, what does that make him? I'd like to broaden the criteria. For what, you know, even in terms of what we're doing at blackelectric.com. I got highly opinionated people who are not involved in any of these initiatives. I'm not saying you have to, but I'm just saying, I mean, how can you not support the Bloods, Crips, Latin Kings, MS-13, and others coming together? I mean, is it just an article? Is that all it is? We just want to be fascinated by gang culture? Maurice from Philadelphia, he said, since you have touched on Marcus Garvey, can you please recommend a book? Sure. I think it's called The Philosophy and Opinions of Marcus Garvey. I would start there, Maurice. Did you all know that Marcus Garvey's wife wrote the Honorable Elijah Muhammad a letter pledging her support? Indicating how impressed she was with the Muslim program. As some people run around try to create disunity between the followers of the Honorable Marcus Garvey and the followers of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I see that. Isn't that stupid? They don't even know. His wife wrote a letter of support. So dumb. Gwen from Lake Charles, Louisiana, she says, Cedric, yes, I was referring to the fashion article. There is nothing more alluring than a long, hold on. Gwen from Lake Charles, Louisiana says, Cedric, yeah, I was referring to the fashion article. There is nothing more alluring than a long, somewhat form-fitting dress. I always love those myself. I love you, Cedric. Gwen. I love you too, Gwen. And I love that post. That's right, Mystique. Now, according to the Muhammad Speaks article from April 1962, it says that there are three basic rules for women to follow, the black woman to follow, to be beautiful. One, cleanliness. Two, modesty. And three, naturalness. Let me read this again. You're a black woman and you need to only follow a few basic rules to be beautiful. Cleanliness internally and externally at all times, for cleanliness is next to godliness. Modesty is a woman's most valuable asset. It makes her far more noticeable and interesting than does the frequently almost naked fashion we see in the streets daily. Last but not least, naturalness. You, the black woman, are beautiful without the cakes of makeup you have been wrongly taught to wear. Every feature on your face is clearly defined without accenting them. You were born with the right color hair to match your beautiful skin. Strawberry, blonde, and bottle green does not complement your skin color the way your natural hair does. Dress to accent your femininity. Do not let anyone change your perfectly designed body by making you pear-shaped one season and S-shaped the next. Amen to that. So Gwen says, yes, I was referring to the fashion article. There is nothing more alluring than a long, somewhat form-fitting dress. I always love those myself. Getting hot in the fourth hour. I'm going to go another 20 minutes to make up for the botched assassination attempt on me earlier at 2:09 Eastern time. You have to check the archives to see what happened. think I touched all the bases. Get it hot for you all. I still got this Nas performance. From Indianapolis, we hear True said, we talk and talk too much, but we don't get up off our rusty dusty. Oh, man. I just want to clean up the ghetto. The ghetto of your mind, in my mind, in our neighborhoods. This is R. Blakey right here in the Jazz Messengers. Send me some comments. I'm not done yet. I'm trying to motivate you to open up this black-owned bank account or start a susu in your family. Turn your family reunion into an economic empowerment session. Frank Muhammad from Chicago. He says President Carter is right. Israel has too much influence in U.S. politics, and Obama knows he can't speak freely regarding Israel without decreasing his chances of winning. I just hope Obama's willingness to play the game doesn't mean he'll avoid taking a stand when the time is right. Family, I got news for you. I drink a little water on that. Frank Muhammad bringing some fire. I would not have a problem with Senator Obama. I will have a problem with our relationship with him. Why should the brother take a stand when we don't have effective lobbies? For instance, the best way to counter what you feel is an improper American foreign policy slanted towards certain countries is form an effective one. Where's the lobby on Africa? Where's the lobby on the Caribbean? If we had a strong, effective lobby for the Caribbean and Africa, the EU and the United States would never try to pull the crap they just pulled at the World Trade Organization and through these economic partnership agreements with Europe. So again, Senator Obama is not just saying what he has to in regards to Israel. He's saying what he has to in regard to tax cuts. He's saying what he has to in regards to senior citizens. He's saying what he has to in regards to environmental issues. Everybody that has power is speaking his language. But we're the only ones that think that a good argument is what makes a politician do our bidding. I've said this before. I believe it was Franklin Delano Roosevelt who told the Big Six leaders and A. Philip Randolph, who wanted him to sign legislation. He said, make me sign it. Make me sign it. Senator Obama's saying the same thing. Whatever you black people want me to do, make me do it. The old people make me do it. The NAACP makes me do it. The Sierra Club makes me do it. AIPAC makes me do it. So while it's true that I think AIPAC is more powerful than a lot of these other lobbies, everybody that's getting a politician to do what they want is doing it because they are effectively organized with their message, their votes, and their money. We're the only people that expect a politician to do something without being organized with our money, our votes, and our message through the media. So Frank Muhammad makes a great point. I'm just dealing with the last aspect, which is his hope. He didn't say he expects Obama to take a stand. He just said he hopes he does. So thank you for your comment, Frank. Brother Frank. Joaquin from the Bronx says, I hope brothers and sisters are not expecting the grass to be greener on the other side. Going to another land with the same mentality that we have here is not going to produce different results. And it is likely to get us ejected from our new home. Everybody, I don't want to make it too public. Look into the history between the followers of the Honorable Marcus Garvey that went to Ethiopia. Man, it wasn't pretty from what I was told. And check out some of the Negro business persons that went to South Africa after Mandela was freed and made president. I heard we made a mess of things over there. LAZAR from Brooklyn, he says, pardon my childish way by calling Jesse a houseman, but I'm just upset. My congregation is trying to create or produce our media outlet, but facing problems because a lot of people outside of our faith don't like us because we believe Jesus was black. We believe Jesus was black. LAZAR, there's a lot of people that believe Jesus is black. You need to unite with them, even if they're outside of Brooklyn. But I'm with you. LAZAR is about it. The Haitian community in Brooklyn is serious. Cameron from Patterson, New Jersey says, I'm glad you mentioned individualism. Individualism is the biggest undermining concept we have braced. We have allowed Madison Avenue to market the idea to us. If we don't go to Africa collectively, outside forces will select who gets in. This is On Point analysis. And this is some On Point music right here. Art Blakey. Hold on, I got an article I want to read. Let me explain something. I already know that black people are not going to unite until we have to. I'm just trying to help be in the group and help get the group, the critical mass of us that do decide to do things on the basis of a reasonable argument. Some hot music and some handsome and beautiful front men and women. Got to use all kind of techniques with us. Let me read this article. This is going to help you unite. I got the article that's going to show you how the black man and woman are going to unite. Not because of the beautiful blackownedbank.com website. It's an article from last week's Wall Street Journal. States slammed by tax shortfalls. It says here, the stumbling U.S. economy is forcing states to slash spending and cut jobs in order to close a projected $40 billion shortfall in the current fiscal year. The gap identified Wednesday in a survey by the National Conference of State Legislatures is more than triple the size of previous years. It is the result of broad economic weakness at the state and local levels that could cause pain throughout this year and 2010. Sales tax collections, for example, have been hurt by the housing slump and high gasoline prices, which are prompting cutbacks in consumer spending. Personal income tax collections have been hit by rising unemployment, while corporate income tax collections have been eroding by falling profits. Everybody, who works for the government more than us? Do you see where we're headed? If the government is cutting back and laying off employees, who what does that mean for us? In my book, whenever my book comes out, right now it's looking like February 09. In my book, I get into how the government became the number one employer of our people, particularly our women. But with these tax revenue shortfalls in all of these states, what do you think is going to happen when you lose your beautiful government job? It says here, we expect it to get worse before it gets better, said Corina Eckel, the fiscal program director of the National Conference of State Legislatures. The conference's new report describes the shortfall states face in their budget processing for the current fiscal year, which began in July. A separate survey of economic conditions by the Federal Reserve's 12 regional banks, the Beige Books, said that economic activity of the U.S. consumer spending was, quote, mixed, weak, or slowing in nearly all areas, despite the distribution of billions of dollars in economic stimulus checks. The Beige Book survey also said companies are increasingly worried about growth prospects and inflation. Indeed, also on Wednesday, discount chain Costco World Wholesale Group, a corporation, warned that its profits will fall well below Wall Street's expectations for its fiscal fourth quarter ending August 31st. It blamed the speed of manufacturers' price increases. But check this out. Unlike the federal government, most states are required to balance their budgets. Most have so far resisted tax increases, instead opting for raising prices on things like tolls and college tuition and cutting back on services like education and healthcare. Some choose one-time measures such as tapping rainy day funds that were built up in flusher times. That could lead to future cutbacks if the economy doesn't bounce back in coming months. Now, it gets worse. Listen to that. Listen up. The spreading economic weakness also is affecting localities, which are being ravaged by falling property tax collections and a decline in state aid. Says here, In Massachusetts, state officials are trying to close loopholes that let companies reduce their tax bills in part by shifting income out of state. Quote, you couldn't afford to simply waste $500 million a year by allowing tax avoidance, said Noah Berger, executive director of the Massachusetts Budget Policy Center, a Boston think tank. The state says it expects to generate $291 million from cracking down on corporate tax loopholes. In Illinois, Governor Rod, was it Blagojevich, unilaterally cut $1.4 billion from the $59 billion budget the legislature sent him in May. The state says it expects to have an additional $500 million through belt tightening at state agencies. So they're cutting back, y'all. I just wanted to, you know, let you know that I'm not under any delusion here. I know that this beautiful message of cooperative economics is not enough. We need a behind whipping. We need the winds to come and destroy us. I mean, Rod Ginyar says, with yet another bank failing like IndyMac in California and Wachovia on the ropes, it's a hard sell, but a necessary one to talk about circling the wagons around some kind of collective financial effort. Start slow and build these black-owned banks and it will happen. Yeah, I mean, my thing is, I'm not here to defend commercial banks or the FDIC. The FDIC is what is really insuring your money. It's not the private bank that you're in. And that's why I'm saying this bank initiative is not just for commercial banks. It's for you and I to become a bank and to bank with one another. So I'm just as enthusiastic about promoting investment clubs and ESUSUs, rotating credit and savings associates. I'm actually more enthusiastic about promoting them than I am, you know, a particular commercial bank. But why not? If you haven't taken your money out of Wachovia Bank of America, why would you take it? Why would you not put it into a black-owned bank? They're both insured by the government, so your concern should be with the government. And I'm not saying you shouldn't have concern. I'm just saying, feel me on that, you know? Bank with one another. How about that? Whether it's formal or informal. Frank Muhammad from Chicago says, you're right about effective lobbying, Brother Cedric. Minister Louis Farrakhan said a couple years ago that a window of opportunity will open to blacks soon. Obama is a sign. We need to be extremely proactive to squeeze through that window. I agree. If you got a brother whose father is from Kenya, Africa, and you can't flip that into developing a black lobby for Africa and the diaspora, you really are walking dead, as Brother Malcolm and Nas said. We are really black zombies. If God and the ancestors have given us a brother with a father from Africa and a country in particular that's having a political dispute, Kenya, and we can't take that opportunity to seize the moment to build up a strong APAC-like lobby for Africa, damn, man. Rod Ginyard, Culver City, California, he says, Arnold has squandered the budget of the most populous state in the nation. California is about to be dropped to the status of junk bond status if our good governor doesn't handle it right. Colorado politician suggested we stop putting out our money for immigrant payouts. Okay, it's a story I want to get to. I want to show you why President McCain is going to be your next president. I've been saying this, that Ward Connolly would be kingmaker. Listen closely. As the economy dwindles, you're going to start to see more criticism of affirmative action programs. And Ward Connolly has three initiatives against affirmative action in Arizona, Colorado, and Nebraska. I believe that this referendum will swing in favor of will swing Colorado in favor of McCain. I said this earlier. The recent polling, which you cannot always trust, is showing Obama starting to lose in Colorado. Listen to this closely, because of what I just said, what I just read, and what Ginyar just said about California, you're going to start to see blacks being blamed again. Why do you have affirmative action in a quota system, quote unquote, when I'm losing my job? Speak to us, John McCain, with this hateful message that's going to get you into the White House.
Opponents of affirmative action are trying to get a referendum on the ballot here that would do away mm-hmm. with affirmative action. Do you support that?
Yes, I do. I do not believe in quotas, but I have not seen the details of some of these proposals, but I've always opposed
But the
quotas.
One here in Arizona you support?
I support it, yes.
One more time, Senator McCain, ride this message. Give us the message that's going to ride you right into the White House, brother.
Opponents of affirmative action are trying to get a referendum on the ballot here that would do away mm-hmm. with affirmative action. Do you support mm-hmm. that?
Yes, I do. I do not believe in quotas, but I have not seen the details of some of these proposals, but I've always opposed
But the
quotas.
One here in Arizona you support?
I support it, yes.
Listen to these lyrics closely. This is going to help us do for self. These budget cuts, the ending of affirmative action.
I was in New York City a few months ago, and the garbage and the trash men were on strike. I'm talking about the maintenance people for the city. What they were trying to do was they were trying to get a little more money, you know, get a little raise in pay. But at that particular time, the city was broke. They were about ready to declare default. I tell you, the garbage in some places was stacked up 2-3 stories high. At night, boy, at night it wasn't even safe to walk the street, you see, because the rats, the roaches, and the water bugs, I mean, they were hustling, baby, trying to get something easy. And let me tell you something, it was stinking, boy, there was all kind of disease in there, you know. But it only brought to mind the fact that you can no longer depend on the man downtown to take your business like he's supposed to, when he's supposed to. In order for us to get it like it's supposed to be, as far as cleanliness, you know, and safety, we gotta get together and do it for ourselves. That's the only way it's gonna be done. And you know what I'm talking about? Let me tell you what I mean.
LA's R from Brooklyn says, are susu legal? Because my mother did it and got ripped off by a church lady. I think she owes my mother $20,000. Oh, this is a real easy one to answer. Any fraudulent activity, deception, that violates an understanding between two peoples is illegal. But pooling your resources collectively, informally or formally, is not illegal. Pyramid schemes are illegal. There's a website called Pyramid Scheme Alert. But as you follow, as you read the information on blackownedbank.com, you know, consult a financial professional and legal advisor. But were the Jewish free loan societies legal? Did they ask that question? July 30th, 2008, hottest show in the diaspora, Cedric Muhammad, the Black Coffee Program, blackcoffeechannel.com. Speak now, forever hold your peace. I'm about to let this Nas live performance on the Colbert Report rip. What were Nas's sales numbers this week? I didn't look. I wanted to see if he maintained his numbers. If he could keep maybe 70% of his first week sales, he's in good shape. But he's probably going to go a slow burn platinum. Slow platinum.
This song right here is off my new album about the worst TV network in existence. I call it Sly Fox. The Sly Fox, Fry Flocks, we locked in the idiot box. Video slots, broadcast the Waco, Davidian plots. They own YouTube, MySpace. When this ignorant mess gon' stop, they monopolize the news, your views, and the channel you choose. Propaganda, visual cancer, the eye in the sky, number 5 on the dial. Secret agenda, frequency antenna, Dr. Mindbender. Remote control game is over, your slave culture, brain culture, game's over. What's a Fox characteristic? Slickness, censored, misinformation, pimp the station, overstimulation. Reception, deception, Comcast, digital, Satan. The Fox has a bushy tail, and push tails, lies, and Fox trots. So I don't know what's real. Watch what you watching. Fox keeps feeding us toxins. Stop sleeping, start thinking outside of the box and unplug from the Matrix doctrine. But watch what you say, big brother is watching. Watch what you watching. Fox keeps feeding us toxins. Stop sleeping, start thinking outside of the box and unplug from the Matrix doctrine. But watch what you say, Fox, Fox. Fear factor got you all scared up. Oh rally, oh really, no rally needed. I'll tie you up. Network for child predators, setting them up. My space filled pools of sluts. Y'all exploit rap culture, then y'all flip on us. And you own the post, and y'all on us. What is your net worth? You gon' try to censor my next verse. Throw them off the roof next verse.
while I'm clicking my cursor, reading blogs about pressure they put on Universal. It gets worse while I click in my mouth, while they kick in my house, they figure us out. While a brother goes south, it's probably we caught a body. No sleep, they watching. I watch CBS and I CBS, trying to track us down with GPS. Make a brother wanna invest in PBS. Watch what you watching. Fox keep feeding us toxins. Stop sleeping, start thinking outside of the box and unplug from the matrix doctrine. But watch what you say, big brother is watching. Watch what you watching. Fox keep feeding us toxins. Stop sleeping, start thinking outside of the box and unplug from the matrix doctrine. But watch what you say, Fox files. They say I'm all about murder, murder, but kill, kill. But what about Grindhouse and Kill Bill? What about Cheney and Halliburton? The backdoor deals on all your fields. Oz Nas the most violent person. Y'all no talent if it hits you breaking up. Criminal possessing charges with a pistol. I use Viacom as my firearm to lift the lyrics. Splinter, who do you rely upon? To shoot shells at Leviathan. Dealing with the higher palm. Checking how I write a poem. The only fox that I love was the red one. Only black man in fox love is a jail or a dead one. Red rum, political bedlam. Don't let the hype into your eyes and eardrum. Murdoch on Fox, not 18 with Baracas. And he hate Baracas, he marched with the marching.
Charleston has long made its fortune by harvesting people from afar. Today it's tourists. Centuries ago it was slaves. Both industries were incredibly successful, but this year, which marks two centuries since the import of human cargo was banned in this country, Charleston business people are realizing that slavery, at least the discussion of it, can be lucrative once again. The carefully preserved plantations are sprucing up their slave cabins and offering heaps of new information about the part that forced servitude played in settling the South.
Now, one of the unique approaches we're taking to this cabin and the next cabin, Cabin B, is that we're not just restoring it, but we're preserving it. There was a lot of stuff that was intact. So we're restoring one side back to 1850 as it was new, mm-hmm. but we're preserving the other room just as it is now.
Alfonso Brown, founder of Gullah Tours, used to be one of the only games in town for tourists trying to find black history.
We all have great tours, you know, Charleston got some great tours, guides and great tours, and just that we all tell different things. When you find me having my own company, I do my own research. And with other big companies, most of the time, they do their own research, and at the time they did their research. At that time, the tours catered to whites. And you find now that many of them have changed their script to focus more on blacks, but that's why I find it important to create my own research so I can do more black history tours, tell of more black sites in history, because it's an untold story.
Magnolia Plantation expects to draw a whole new demographic, an additional 15,000 to 20,000 visitors a year, by restoring its five slave cabins and building an interpretive center nearby. On May 9th, the Gibbs Museum of Art opened a new exhibit titled Landscape of Slavery, The Plantation in American Art. The show took 4 years to compile and has drawn rave reviews and diverse crowds. This is Kyle Stock for Charleston.net.
Cedric Muhammad, Black Coffee Program, I'm about to raise up, but I just wanted to let you know that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan speaks. Topic, the Education Challenge, a new educational paradigm for the 21st century. Sunday, August 3rd, 2008. The admission is free if you're in Chicago. It's at Christ Universal Temple. Doors open at 2 p.m. Program starts at 3, but there will be a live webcast, according to the flyer I have here. Not sure about that, but go to finalcall.com. Stay tuned. Finalcall.com. We'll be able to give you the details of that. Enjoyed every minute of it. Pray you and your families are safe and well protected for the next week, and the same for myself. How can I end this show? Let me see.
And now I shall give you the first cue as to the nature of the great master key, which has been responsible for all the great successes in every calling, in every part of the world. Please listen carefully to what I have to say, because you may discover the secret of the master key in this first visit. You may get your first cue as to the nature of the great master key when I tell you that psychologists have discovered a natural law which is the very foundation of all personal successes. And I can describe it to you in one short sentence so you can understand it. Whatever the mind can conceive and believe, the mind can achieve.
You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.